Like Call It What You Want, which we know is your favorite podcast about the beautiful game, Vuori is committed to delivering a great experience for everyone, which is highlighted by their new perspective on performance apparel. Everything is designed to work out in, but doesn't look or feel like it. In fact, I'm rocking their Stratotech polo right now, along with their Sunday performance jogger pants, so I can be business on top when I'm on camera, but super comfortable on the bottom. And it's just the best. Vuori gear is incredibly versatile, and it can be used for just about any activity. Running, training, swimming, lounging around, hosting podcasts, doing errands, whatever your heart desires, because Vuori is an investment in your happiness. And for our listeners, they are offering 20% off your first purchase. So go get yourself some of the most comfortable and versatile clothing on the planet at Vuori.com/call it. That's Vuori.com/call it. Not only will you receive 20% off your first purchase, but enjoy free shipping on any U.S. orders over $75 and free returns. Go to Vuori.com/call it and discover the versatility of Vuori clothing.
Hey, I'm Brett Podolsky, co-founder of The Farmer's Dog. We make fresh food for dogs. We started the company when we saw what a huge difference it made in my own dog, Jada, when she stopped eating ultra-processed kibble and started eating fresh, whole food. The Farmer's Dog food isn't fancy. It's just real food delivered to your door in pre-portioned packs. It's better for them and easier for you.
Get 50% off your first box at thefarmersdog.com/podcast. That's thefarmersdog.com/podcast.
Hello and welcome, all of you Call It What You Wanters. It's Call It What You Want, your favorite podcast about the beautiful game. I'm Jimmy Conrad alongside Jesse Marsh and Charlie Davies, and we have a hell of a show for you guys today because Americans just keep scoring goals. It's just what they do no matter where they play on the planet. But before we get into them and some what-ifs about maybe if certain players aren't available for the Nations League semifinals, should we go with somebody else? We'll get into it in a little bit, but first we have the Call It What You Want word of the day. Are you guys ready for this one?
Are we calling him the Call You What You Want Terse? That's what we're calling the...
You know what? I just how I started the show, Jesse. I mean, okay. I don't know.
Yeah, I was a little confused there, Jesse, too. Don't worry.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, maybe we need... I mean, I feel like we're really gathering a following. Actually, I really have no idea if that's true or not, but...
I appreciate your honesty.
But we should honor our... Our followers in some way.
There are a few.
Okay, good.
Because they're in the DMs telling me what we should be talking about on the show.
Okay, so, well, that's good.
Or, or it's not like, hey, what do you and Charlie think? It's like, hey, can you ask Jesse about what he thinks about, you know? So I just feel like I'm your publicist at this point.
Thank you, Jimmy.
You're welcome. All right, as we know, word of the day. This game is known as soccer, football, couchio, a whole bunch of different stuff around the world. And I want you guys to guess, part of our tradition here.
Yes.
Here is the word of the day. Kubata Kagta.
Oh.
Kubata Kagta. That is what the beautiful game is known in what country, boys? Who's going first? Chuck, I see you a little anxious there, ready to go.
Kubata? Can I get that Kagta. Repeated again?
Kubata Kagta.
Kagta.
No, Kagta.
Oh, Kagta.
You know what? Now that I pronounce it, yeah, okay, give me that the hard G instead of the hard
Kubata.
C. You've got it all figured out now. Kubata Kagta.
Kubata Kagta.
Ring a bell.
Kubata. I'm going to go India.
Okay. It's interesting. I'm feeling a similar.
I feel like
I'm going to go Afghanistan.
Okay.
I see both of you, and I see both wrong answers. Okay, let me give you into the clues. Let's get into the clues. I got two clues for you. This country's national team currently sits in 198th in FIFA Men's World Ranking.
Really
bad. If
anybody
takes any stock into FIFA's World Ranking. And then secondly, this is an African country that has never qualified for the World Cup, nor has it qualified for the Africa Cup of Nations.
Okay.
Well,
I'll go Rwanda.
Okay. No, he's close. You feel what? I mean, again, your face. I'm trying to read your face. Rwanda, I'll go Congo.
Both are not correct.
Oh,
Last clue. It's not Botswana.
I think Congo has qualified for African Cup.
I think you're right. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's not Botswana. That's our next clue.
It's not Botswana. That was my last clue.
Oh, wow. That's really helpful.
Very helpful.
Kubata Kagta. Which country? Which language?
I feel like that's Eastern Africa. Okay. Yeah. Could be Sudan. So you got Kenya, Sudan, Ethiopia, Eritrea,
Somalia.
Somalia.
Hey, got it, Jesse Marsh. Out of nowhere, Chuck just listed 10 of them, and then you said Somalia, and you're the big winner, Jesse. Well played. That is excellent.
You named every country
except Somalia. That is great.
Oh,
I love
my gosh,
that.
Charlie. I'm putting some pressure on you, my friend.
Remind me to never do trivia with Charlie. We had the fun, some good laughs. Time to get in the show. I don't know how serious you guys want to be about this first topic, but the U.S. Open Cup has announced it's going to be playing in 2024. There was some potential threat of it not actually happening because MLS announced in December that they were going to pull their teams out and not play and only send their U23 teams, also known as MLS Next Pro. And obviously everybody went crazy on that because this is the oldest club competition we have in this country, over 100 years old. It has history, which MLS is still trying to gain, as is all the other leagues in this country as well. And now there's a compromise. They found a compromise. So for those that don't know, 8 MLS clubs will be participating, their full teams, in this competition. 11 will be sending their MLS Next Pro teams. And the rest of the teams are in the CONCACAF Champions Cup, so they are not going to be eligible to compete in this particular competition. Now, I don't know. The word for me that stands out, Jesse, I'll come to you first, compromise. This feels like a compromise in some capacity. But I don't know if compromise was really going to make everybody feel better about it. What do you say?
Yeah, I'm not satisfied. It's like trying to appease the powers that be, the fans, like to make people feel like that there's flexibility and a desire to be part of the tournament. But it's no real commitment to me. So I've seen a few comments from different coaches from different teams that aren't involved. And the fact that they're not happy about it. And I understand if I were an MLS team and not having the opportunity to compete for that trophy, I would be incredibly disappointed. And it's, by the way, it's not random that Seattle's in that group, right? That Kansas City's in that group, obviously Houston having won it, but like teams that value the tournament. Right. And so I don't know, man, it doesn't sit well with me. Mm-hmm. I understand that there was a schedule congestion, but for me, the only solution was that every team needed to be involved. That's it.
Can we talk about the schedule congestion a little bit? Because one of the teams that aren't on this list because they're playing the CONCACAF Champions Cup is the Columbus Crew, and they just announced that they're going to play Aston Villa in a friendly in the summer. And I'm like, wait, Chuck, you can't have it both ways. You can't cry schedule congestion and it's just too many games for the players and then start scheduling friendlies against Premier League teams, which I get. I understand it. That's a really exciting team to play against, but it just kind of it goes against the logic of why you're not playing in the Open Cup. And just make it make sense, Chuck, please.
Yeah, no, it's not going to make sense. I mean, that's just a business decision. It's a friendly. So I don't really have an issue with that. What I do have an issue is teams saying, oh, we'll participate, but we're only going to participate halfway. So we're going to send our second teams. Please tell me what Austin have done to think they're too good for the U.S. Open Cup. What have they won? What have they done? You look at Chicago, Colorado Rapids, who have been atrocious for a long time. what gives them the right to say, you know what, we'll pass, we'll send our second team? So when I'm looking at this again, sorry, Jesse, but Red Bull is like, come on, you have to play in this. So I'm looking at these teams. I'm thinking it's just there's not a real, I think, argument for them to say we are too good for the U.S. Open Cup. We have too many games. You have so much to play for. Your fans demand more and they deserve more. So I'm just disappointed with the teams that can participate in this that aren't.
Okay, St. Louis City actually came out and stated our preference would have been to be able to play in this competition. Every decision that MLS needs to make, you're bound to find places where part of the teams are in support and part of them have different opinions. That's St. Louis City. Cincinnati said, as we look ahead to 2025, we believe that each MLS franchise should be given the option to decide their own approach to participating in the Open Cup. Our team and staff want every opportunity to compete for trophies and never want to be excluded from such competitions. It's almost like they heard Jesse Marsh just talk about it. And then Philadelphia Union head coach Jim Curtin just said, "You guys know my love for the competition. It's a great one. I don't think that the solution that comes out for this season will be necessarily the solution forever." So, yeah, I'm disappointed. I feel like there must have been something coming from a U.S. soccer perspective where maybe they didn't have as strong of a leg to stand on as maybe we all think they do. Maybe there's something in the legalese that doesn't allow them to hold MLS accountable or hold them to this higher standard that we just expect. So I don't know. Maybe I'm reading the tea leaves here in a way, but it just feels like it's really disappointing ultimately. And to your point, Jesse, I'm not satisfied with this solution either. And really because it's MLS created this problem by creating Leagues Cup, which, you know, they're going to argue is a superior product. But what's interesting for those that don't know is that MLS was in charge of marketing the U.S. Open Cup from 2005 to 2022. And they're saying that now when you see some of their quotes, it's like, well, there's no money in it. Nobody's even talking about it. There's no publicity. Like, you guys were in charge of that. God, this just frustrates me. I get a little frustrated. This competition's awesome. Plus, a shout out to all the Lamar Hunt former owned teams that are still in it, because Lamar Hunt owned a whole bunch of teams back in the day, and Dallas and Kansas City were his two most prominent, and they're in the competition. It'd be kind of weird if they were.
Columbus, right? He owned Columbus as well.
That's true. He owned Columbus too. That's right.
So if you are in the CONCACAF Champions Cup, you can't play in U.S. Open Cup?
That's correct.
And that's just because they aligned it during the same time? Because why could they compete in it before and not now?
I think because Leagues Cup takes over those dates. That's my understanding. Because those midweek dates that are going to go or going to be spread out over that summer or whatever it may be are now gone.
So it is literally impossible for
impossible now.
I find it hard to believe that it's impossible. If you just go through the weeks of the season, and okay, maybe it has to be that you have almost all midweek matches, but like the tournament means something. It means something to the sport in the country. It means something to the lower divisions. It means something to the fans. Like, I don't understand. There's prestige attached to what the trophy is and what it means to the sport in our country. And again, it's the oldest tournament. It's the oldest tournament of any kind in our country. And then the MLS is just going to say, yeah, we choose not to have our full commitment from our teams. I don't get it.
I'm looking at our very own Chuck Booth's, his article on CBS Sports. If you want to get more information, go head over there to go check it out. But he's got the schedule on his column. First round is actually March 19th through the 20th, 21st, excuse me. Second round would be beginning of April. Third round a couple weeks later. Round of 32, beginning of May. Round of 16, towards the end of May. Quarterfinal is in July. Semifinal, end of August. And finals at the end of September. So I guess it doesn't really coincide with Leagues Cup.
do you remember Arsenal back in the day? It's just because I follow Arsenal, so I remember vividly. Is Arsene Wenger would play a full team of kids in reserves that were still attached to the first team, but it was a complete turnover, and they would still make it far every season. So I don't get why MLS couldn't do the same thing.
Agreed.
Take out your 11 starters.
If you're sending your MLS next team,
right,
then why not? You know, you could make it a mixed squad. Like, mm-hmm. it doesn't, I don't know. There's clearly not enough financial incentive for the clubs to want to do it and to want, and for the league to want to be a part of it. And there's no other excuse.
You think it's control though? Control. Like, MLS doesn't have control over this. It's actually now in U.S. soccer's hand. U.S. soccer's hands after they handed over a lot of the responsibility to MLS for many years. I feel like, hey, we've created all these competitions. We're creating our youth academy. We're creating the path to becoming a pro in MLS. We are creating Leagues Cup.
This is about Leagues Cup, Jimmy. This for me is about Leagues Cup. And Leagues Cup means more money and more TV
revenue.
And that's in the end, that's what it is. Like it's again, it's a version of the Super League, right? Yeah. Like imagine if you're a USL team and now you don't really get the, I mean, okay, maybe you have a better chance to win the tournament or go far, but you don't really have the chance to compete against the best teams and be part of this tournament in a way where it actually means what it has always meant. And that's what Super League would mean, or you know, a division of the haves and the have nots.
Yeah.
And this is about Leagues Cup for me.
All right, everybody, we're going to take our first break and call it what you want. When we come back, we're going to play a little game called What If? So don't go anywhere.
On May 23rd,
I want to go back to normal.
What's normal?
The Paramount Plus original series, Evil, returns.
We've already hunted werewolves and demons.
And now what? A baby antichrist?
Okie dokie.
Prepare yourself.
You will not beat us.
For the end.
I have visions of hell.
Make it stop. Make it shut up.
You're not gonna survive this.
Evil, the final season. Streaming May 23rd, only on Paramount Plus.
New CBS Monday.
NCIS! Here's where we can see them.
NCIS and NCIS Hawaii return with all new cases.
Double tap to the chest, one to the head.
These guys are professionals.
All new criminals.
Violent island you got here.
Welcome to paradise.
And all new crimes to be solved.
If you're watching this, I've been arrested.
What are the charges?
Just one. Murder.
New NCIS and NCIS Hawaii. Monday starting at 9, 8 central on CBS and streaming on Paramount Plus.
Welcome back to Call What You Want. I'm Jimmy alongside Chuck and Jesse Marshmallow Marsh. And we are going to do a little game called What If? Now, the question's going to start us in this game is, what if Tyler Adams and Weston McKennie miss out on the Nations League semifinals, Nations League overall? What do you do? So let's Chuck, I'll come to you first. You're putting on the hat here. You're on the coaching staff of the U.S. Men's National Team. What if those two are out? I know Tyler Adams is back at training with Bournemouth. Great news. And Weston, he seems like he hurts his shoulder a lot, so maybe he'll be fine. But let's assume they're both going to be out. What do you do then?
All right. Automatic starter, without even thinking about it twice, Johnny Cardoso.
Mm.
He has started 7 straight matches in La Liga for Real Betis. 1 goal, 2 assists. He's been phenomenal. He's been one of the first names penned into the starting 11. He's been that good. And that's a stacked team, especially in the midfield. So I think from that standpoint, you're covered. Also, I want to give a lot of credit to Luca Della Torre because he, for me, has taken a massive step forward under Rafa Benitez this season at Celta Vigo. He's got exactly 20 starts. He's played over 1,700 minutes in La Liga. 1 goal and 2 assists in his last 5. He has really come along. And I always felt that you were missing something from Luca Della Torre. Typically, it was side to side. There wasn't really purpose in the way that he played. It wasn't, I'm going to goal or I'm trying to create a goal. It was kind of, I'm just here floating around. I'm an option. Now you're starting to see him really have some almost like he has an idea every single time that he's trying to open up gaps for teammates. He's trying to play in the half spaces. He's trying to, you know, find those mismatches. I'm seeing a clear understanding for the position and what the goal is for him on the pitch. So I'm really pleased that the depth in the midfield has not slacked off. If anything, they're trying to close the gap. So you have Yunus Musa, you have Johnny Cardoso and Luca Della Torre as 3 capable midfielders who can keep the ball, who are showing that they deserve minutes given that they're playing with their clubs and they're contributing in a meaningful way. They're not just on big clubs, which we've seen from this young group, and not playing or coming in as substitutes. They're getting meaningful minutes in big matches, and that's what we've always wanted from this group. So I think they've taken a step, and then the next step is being the main men on each club team that they perform for. So no worries here, Jimmy.
Okay, I respect that. I'm going to throw a name in too. I think Malik Tillman has been excellent for PSV, and if we wanted a little bit of a different look. Jesse, I come to you then, kind of same question, but bringing Malik Tillman into that equation as well. Who do you think would be the best lineup against Jamaica as we get a little bit more opponent-specific here with the options available, assuming Tyler and Weston are not available?
First for me is, of course, you know, when you miss guys, even important guys, it's time for the next guy to step up and be ready to go. So it, for me, about managing a team is always about who's available, not who's not available. So, and you're right. I agree with you. I think all the names you named and Tillman into the mix as well, I think you have some great options. For me, Eunice is a starter. You can put him in, and I know he maybe hasn't had as many minutes as Johnny and Luca De La Torre and Malik Tillman, but for me, he's shown that he's a cornerstone of what we're doing in the midfield. Gio, not in the squad this weekend with Nottingham Forest, and we heard it was a knock, so hopefully that's not too bad, but that could be another important player in the group that's not available. So, but for me right now, Musa and Tillman are in the lineup, right? And then I would probably tend toward Johnny, but it depends on if you want to play with two sixes, if you want to play a six and two eights, you know, how you want to use that 4-3-3 and do you want to invert, how you want to look at the three in the midfield and do you want to be a little bit more defensive? Do you want to be a little bit more offensive? But I agree. I think we have some great options. It's great to see depth. I don't worry or stress at all about the quality that all the players that will fill in for those two important in Tyler Adams and Weston McKennie for filling in for those two guys right now. It's maybe our best position, our best options and deepest positions in the team right now is that center midfield. So exciting. I think that's really exciting and it provides competition and it means that even when you're in tournaments or when you have lots of games or when you have two game, you know, they don't do as many of the three games after COVID, three game national team windows like they used to. But nonetheless, for tournaments, I think we have great options moving forward.
Well, Justin, Jimmy, before we get into
Jimmy, I got to throw it on you now.
Let me also add this. Sorry, Charlie. Luca De La Torre played in a double six this week, right? And he's played more as a wider midfielder at times when they play 4-4-2, or he's played as like an 8/10 in when they play a 4-3-3 or when they play like a 3-5-2. So, you know, in there also, it's the quality, the flexibility, the performances. Like you start to have some real options in there, which is exciting.
Okay, fine. Chuck, I'll answer the question. I would have Tillman in the team for sure. The guy was fantastic, and he may or may not be my choice for player of the weekend.
All right, but that wasn't my question to you.
Well, what was your question?
All right, my question is, what do you do in the center of the park when you have Tim Ream not really have only played four matches since December 6th? Is he a starter in this group, in this team? And mind you, the last two matches for Fulham, he was on the bench and had 5 goals for and 1 goal against, beating Man United and Brighton. I don't see him getting back in the team anytime soon.
Yeah, great question. Well, Chris Richards, I thought, is continuing to get minutes, continuing to get trust, even from Oliver Glasner. And I think that's a good sign for him to be one of our starters for sure. If Tim Ream, I mean, if you're looking at him thinking, I don't know if he's going to be as sharp as we need him to be. Cameron Carter-Vickers is still coming off a little bit of an injury, even though he's back playing for Celtic and scoring goals as well. I don't know if he's going to be sharp enough. You'd like to think he is if he's now starting to cut his teeth and getting starts, or will be heading into this break. Those would be the two guys I would consider. Miles Robinson got a goal for FC Cincinnati, so he's probably feeling pretty good about himself and a big 2-1 win. There's going to be options there too. It's just a matter of what's the right combination going to be. And that's why I kind of started to slant it towards opponent specific. Who's going to be our best?
Jamaica, give me the best partnership right now.
For me, if everybody was healthy and playing time is still factored in, but everybody's healthy, I'd roll out CCV and Chris Richards at this point, or Chris Richards and Miles Robinson. I'd bring Tim in for sure. See where he is. Because if you get through and you feel like he can give you something, I don't know, I kind of get an idea where he's at. However, it's going to kind of lead into my next what if. And my next what if was, because of the lack of minutes, so I'm glad you brought this up. It's a nice segue, Chuck. What if you didn't bring in Gio Reyna for this camp? Like, what do you think that would be a net positive overall? because you're setting a precedent that you got to be playing regularly. I'm just saying. That's my what if. The guy hasn't played. The move to Nottingham Forest hasn't worked out.
I would advise Greg Berhalter to not do that.
There's a lot of emotional weight to that if he doesn't bring him in, of course. There's more baggage to this particular player than others. But I don't know. Would you consider not bringing him in because you've got other guys that are just playing better? They're just playing better. And so, I don't think
– So to your point, what if – You know, you don't. Would you not bring in Matt Turner because he's not playing?
That's a great retort.
What I would say is, Jimmy, you know, it's all case specific, so you can't just say this is the baseline, the threshold for everybody because everyone's situation is different. If Christian is at Real Madrid or Barcelona and he's not playing, he's still coming in. He's still your best player, right? So what I'm saying for Gio Reyna is he's so different. Because he has that special ability with the ball at his feet to open up teams, that you still bring him in. You have to assess where he's at. What can he contribute? Because he could still come off the bench and make a difference, right? But I think there's a big difference between him and Tim, just in terms of their ability, their age, what they can provide versus, you know, I think Tim Ream is better when you're starting because he has the full game and you know. If he's fit and playing every week. But I think at this point, it seems like father time comes for everybody. You know, it was just a matter of time. He had been performing at such a high level for so long, and he's only getting older. So I'm not surprised that it's happened. Maybe I'm surprised it's happened this fast. But Gio Reyna has got to be called into the camp.
You know, Jimmy, let me, you know, one of the things in England they love to talk about are non-negotiables, right? Everyone says, so what are your non-negotiables? And my response is always, my only non-negotiable is not using the phrase non-negotiable. Because every situation is different, right? And this is from how you find players, how you handle different players, and if they're training, if they're playing, if they're coming back from injury. Every situation is unique. And if you just have blanket coverages for how you deal with things, of course, you always have to have standards and certain rules within a team and how things operate. And everybody has to know what the standards are, but you have to understand the ability to manage and massage situations. So there's clarity and there's commitment and there's belief and there's understanding for what your role is, what, how you fit in the team, how in the moment, what it means for you at any given time. And overall, by doing that effectively as a manager, I think what you get is total team commitment, and players can accept tough messages if they feel like they're handled with respect and honesty. Really, that's how I found things. So, this is what I said a while ago that when a lot of the center midfielders were performing and Gio wasn't getting time at Dortmund, like, you know, maybe Gio's role is a little bit different now than what it would be if he was playing all the time. And you have to be clear with him. And it's not about disrespect. It's just about trying to now manage the group and get the most out of them so that you can perform and get the most out of the team so that you can get results and then achieve big things, achieve big goals within the team. So, yeah, let's see. Let's see how that plays itself out. That'll be interesting to watch.
Yeah, for the record, I would bring in Gio, but I just wanted to throw that out there.
Would you start him, though?
I wouldn't start him. So that kind of gets into like the next tier of that what if, because what else? Like, if I'm Malik Tillman and I'm starting to play at a level against good competition, created the most chances against Borussia Dortmund in the Champions League round of 16, was arguably the man of the match against Feyenoord this past weekend in a 2-2 draw and scored. Like if he comes into camp and doesn't play, like, what else do I got to do? I mean, I guess outside of you just saying, well, you just got to be consistently good like that every single game.
I mean, it's possible for him and Gio to play together, right?
Of course.
But in the end, Tillman, for me, he's playing at an extremely high level right now.
Mm-hmm. Right. So I would start Tillman over Gio. How about you, Chuck? You're asking a lot of questions right now. I need some answers.
Yeah, I am. I'm a man of questions. I'm not starting Gio Reyna against Jamaica. He's not match fit. He's not going to be sharp. It's impossible to play at the international level if you're not playing at club for such a long time and come in against a hungry Jamaica side and be able to go for at least 60 minutes hard. It's just you're not going to be sharp. And
listen, as good as Gio is and as as much as he believes in himself, he has to understand this, mm-hmm. right? He has to understand. And he has to have respect for his teammates that are playing well and playing often. And yeah, so
yeah,
this is normal. This is normal.
Yeah. All right, we're going to take our next break of Call It What You Want. When we come back, we're going to highlight some Americans abroad, and you probably have a pretty good idea who I want to talk about. Don't go anywhere.
Baseball has begun, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today in 5, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Sanfel, every Monday through Saturday as we deliver all of your fantasy baseball needs in just 5 minutes. We'll break down the biggest performers, news, and prospects who could make an impact this season. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.
Welcome back to Call What You Want. I'm Jimmy alongside Chuck and Jesse, and we are going to highlight some performances from some of our players in the U.S. Men's National Team player pool. First, we're going to start with some notable results. And as a preface, we're taping this before Brandon Vasquez and Monterrey take on Pumas. So just to throw that out there, in fairness to whatever Brandon does tonight, hope he does well. Lazio lost 1-0 to AC Milan, and Christian Pulisic, dabbling in the dark arts of playing in CONCACAF, drew 2 red cards. Well played to him. Norwich 1-0. Win over Sunderland. Josh Sargent scores his 7th goal in 8 games. What a beast. Club America on fire. Club America 5-1 win over Atlas. And a player we haven't talked about in a while, Alejandro Zendejas, scores a brace. Atletico Madrid beats Real Betis 2-1. But Johnny got the assist after being named La Liga's U23 Player of the Month for February. Way to go, Johnny. And then in the PSV Feyenoord game, that ended 2-2. Malik Tillman scored a very good goal. He had 3 goal involvements in the last 3 games. He hit the post. He almost had an assist that should have been a tap-in, but it didn't work out. He, for me, was the player of the match. And you guys already know who I'm going with, but I'm going to go to you, Jesse, first. Americans abroad, who stands out for you and why?
So I'm going to talk about Christian, okay? And did you guys see all these moments? What do you think about the first red card? Let's hear that. What do you guys think about that?
So to give everybody context, somebody on Lazio went down with an injury, right? So there was this little bit, you know how that you see it when you watch a game, there's like that pause where all the players like, are we going to continue playing? Are we not going to continue playing? Well, Christian just got the ball and kept playing. And then one of the Lazio defenders who had paused slightly, now maybe slightly out of position, and dragged him down and got his second yellow
So, but for me, like I watch it, Christian didn't see what happened with the player that went down, you know, and it was, by the way, the ball ricocheted off his head and he kind of went down. He didn't go out of the game. It's hard to always tell if players are actually hurt. And Pellegrini for Lazio, if you really want the game to stop, then kick the ball out of bounds. He's a yard from the touchline. Like, what are you thinking? Right. And then if you have a yellow and you pull a player down, like, what the hell is Christian Pulisic supposed to do? If he doesn't know that there's an issue, he's pushing and pressing the player. He wins the ball. He's ready to go to goal. And like the Lazio team reacts like, what is he doing? And, you know, and then you see all the Italian emotion and what the game. But what it like if I'm Lazio, I go to my teammate Pellegrini and go, what are you doing? Kick the freaking ball out. Make sure the play is over. Don't blame the opponent. Like, you know, so for me, and by the way, with Guendouzi too, for me, both red cards were not, you know, a CONCACAF when you describe it that way. He's playing the game and he's playing hard and he's going after it. Like, how can you possibly be blaming him or upset with him for how he deals with specifically those two moments, right? So, like, and this is where, for me, there are certain teams and players who try to be clever with how they game games and the referee. And if you lose track of staying focused on achieving your goal and making sure that you don't ever give the opponent anything, like, then you can lose and you can make big mistakes and you can lose matches for your team. And so Lazio lost their mind. Could the referee have handled it and understood things? But by the law, maybe the referee should blow the whistle if it's a head injury for the Lazio player. But the ball ricocheted off his head. It didn't look like it was so egregious, right? And then, like, kick the, if the if Pellegrini kicks the ball out of bounds, it's done. The action is over. So, you know, I don't have a problem with anything that Christian did in those moments.
All right. And he's your notable American abroad.
I'll just say in general, I thought it was another decent performance, responsible performance, right?
You know, funny, Jesse, you're talking, and now as I start to reflect on how you used to play the game, you're a bit of a, you know, you poke and prod and try to get everybody fired up. So maybe you saw a kindred spirit in how Christian was approaching these plays.
maybe. But I say fair game. Really? I mean, really. Like
Jesse was good to excellent in the dark arts.
Yes, he was.
And then, you know, they get a little my ex-player from Salzburg scores a goal late in the match, Noah Okafor, and they win 1-0. You know, I mean, Milan is a team that I think, you know, they manage to hang around games and just kind of do enough. And they have some quality players. You know, I think Christian has again, we've talked about him a lot, but I think he fits into the game in ways that his manager asks him to play and tries to do everything he can to help his team win every week. And again, when I do any kind of reading around in Italy and the way people are talking about him, I think there's an appreciation for that. I think there's that he's been no nonsense. He goes out every day, every game. He gives everything he has to the team. You know, like when we had this conversation last week with James, what was James?
Bench.
And he's talking about the XG and all this other stuff. Like, okay, we would all like to see him, you know, have a few more goal contributions, but it's just really nice to see him going after games, playing with some confidence, doing everything he can to help his team.
Yeah, I love that. Chuck, how about you?
Yeah, I think there was nothing wrong with what he did in either situation. And if you can con a player into overreacting and using their emotions against them, then fair play to you. They're not mentally strong enough. And Christian Pulisic took advantage of that. And this is a big match for Milan. They needed the 3 points. So, I agree with Jesse. He's done what is asked of him to do. Now, this is his first season. This is when you just want to get your foundation right, get your feet under you. It's the following season where you can start to take liberties. You can start to take a little bit more risks. I think he hasn't necessarily played all that safe, but he hasn't taken it into fifth gear yet. We haven't seen Christian absolutely at his best constantly, where he's calling for the ball, where he's pushing, where he's dictating the game. I think he's done a pretty good damn good job of, you know, appeasing to Rafael Leao, appeasing to Olivier Giroud, not necessarily saying, hey, this is my team, I'm going to take over. So given that this is his first season and he's had these type of performances, you have to be over the moon with what Christian has been able to do and deliver on.
Is that your player of the week too, Charlie? You're going with Christian?
No, my player of the week is Josh Sargent. Are you crazy? My man is scorching hot. 9 straight starts, 8 goals in his last 10. This past game winner against Sunderland, he's in between 2 center backs.
Didn't you say he wouldn't be in your top 3 strikers? Like you'd leave him at home, you'd keep Balogun and Pepe, or
no? Did you say that last week? I said you'd take him.
Can we rewind in that?
Can we roll that clip?
Let's rewind. I said he's number 3 in the pecking order, but he still goes. Now,
okay. This was a striker's goal. You're right, Charlie. He fought.
It was a great goal. Great goal. Great
between,
goal.
Between 2 Jimmy Conrads. My man just absolutely
bossed them.
Bossed them. In the middle, wins the header.
And they're not Jimmy Conrads that they got bossed.
I love how he was able to swivel his hips so quick to get that extra touch. And lashes one home. So for me, Josh Sargent is playing like a man possessed. This is the best form I think I've seen him in definitely with Norwich. So for me, he's ready to go. He's got his flight prepared for Nations League. I think he's earned a spot in that team.
Yeah, I agree. And we'll see if he actually gets some valuable minutes. I'm going to go with Malik Tillman. I've already talked about him a bunch. I did want to add to the fact that he had a chance to win the game with about 10 minutes left. Tried to chip the goalkeeper and miss wide. That would have really put the cherry on top of a great performance. He was named man of the match, not just by myself, but by other reputable outlets out there. And in a big game like that, with the league at stake, first versus second, I thought that was a hell of a performance. And really what I want to see is if we're going to go with him, if Greg Berhalter and the coaching staff are going to go with him in this first game against Jamaica, I don't think he's ever come in for us wearing the red, white, and blue, being the one that we were trying to build around, that we were giving him that type of trust and confidence, like, hey, go drive our team. Make sure you're the one that's connecting the dots in transition and really maybe making that final pass to set up somebody else or finding the goal yourself. Go join the attack if it makes sense. So I want to see him get some valuable minutes to really demonstrate what he's already been demonstrating with PSV over these last couple of weeks in particular. So Malik Tillman is my player of the weekend, and I hope that he continues to do that.
Charlie, have you ever tried chipping? Have you ever scored like one of these chip goals where like you're winding up like you're going to hit it and then you chip the goalkeeper?
In training, never in a game.
Yeah, never in a game, right?
I'm not risking just looking like a buffoon out there trying to chip a keeper.
Yeah, but like think of Dempsey's goal when he was at Fulham when he does this, right?
That was a Schross.
It takes a special like mindset to like have that in your bag, right?
Yeah. What I will say today, calling the Revs game, Lorenzo Insigne, Andrew Farrell was maybe a step and a half off of him. He picked his head up, not enough pressure, and just dinked the most delicate, delightful chip to the far post. And I was like, oh my God, you know, to have that in you to say, you know what? I see it, it's on, but I'm going to execute it and do it just with the utmost confidence that if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. I always felt that if you get to that level of, you feel like you're an untouchable because no one's going to say a damn thing. But I always felt like, oh, there's always another solution than going for the hardest option to pull off.
Sounds like it was a non-negotiable for you, Jesse. That you just
we had it with Zach Thornton in training in Chicago. That if you tried chipping him, he would get so angry. even if it would go in, he was like ready to come over and punch you.
I love that.
And I'd be like, "What's the problem, man? I'm trying to score.
Love that guy. Love that guy." Well, we got some big games coming up. I know we looked backwards. Now we're going to look a little bit forward. Thursday, AC Milan takes on Slavia Prague in the Europa League round of 16. That game is 3 p.m. Eastern on P+, Paramount Plus. So go make sure you check that out. On Friday, we have Go Ahead Eagles, one of my favorite names in the beautiful game. Go Ahead Eagles is the name of the team versus PSV. Saturday, Crystal Palace versus Luton. That'll be 10 a.m. That's pretty early on Saturday morning. Sunday, we got Juventus taking on Atalanta, who lost their first game at home in 2024 to Bologna. Bologna, by the way, blowing up. That game is on Golasso. Make sure you check that out, 1 p.m. Eastern. Then Sunday, Bayer Leverkusen continues to be, talk about scorching hot, killing it, versus Wolfsburg and Kevin Paredes, 2:30 p.m. Eastern. That one kicks off. All right, we're going to take our next break of Call It What You Want. So come back and join us right after this.
When you have sports mixed with your pop culture, along with humor and celebrity interviews, your earbuds are enjoying the Rich Eisen Show.
Dan Orlovsky, are you still a Jaden Daniels is the best quarterback available in the draft guy?
I think the three things that make it stand out for me are, number one, I think his ball placement versus man coverage is the best in the draft. Every quarterback in the NFL is accurate. He's got the best on tape. Number two, most transferable stuff to the NFL. And then I think the third thing is pocket peace.
Search for the Rich Eisen Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Call It What You Want. I'm Jimmy with Chuck and Jesse, and we're going to talk about a manager, an American manager, born in the States, but has really cut his teeth managing in Germany. We probably don't talk about him enough because he's had more success, and he warrants that respect and consideration. But I'm talking about Hoffenheim's Pellegrino Matarazzo, and he's got quite the coaching resume. 2019, he was hired by Stuttgart. They got second in the second Bundesliga, got promoted. The following season, he got ninth place in the Bundesliga. And then he's with Stuttgart again, 15th, and then 15th again. He ended up getting fired. He's joined Hoffenheim, and they've barely survived. And now they're currently in seventh. They just took down Werder Bremen, who are in eighth this past weekend. They take on Eintracht Frankfurt next, who are in sixth. So they're really scraping to potentially get into Europe. And Jesse, I bring him up because I know you're familiar with Pellegrino. And why do you think he doesn't hit our radar as much over here as U.S. men's national team fans or American soccer fans, because we should be championing what this guy has done, and yet he seems to still be kind of in the shadows and fringes.
Well, let me take you through my history with him a little bit. So we played against each other in college. So he went to Columbia. I think he was a freshman when I was a senior. He was a tall center back, good in the air, decent feet, not overly athletic, not, you know, he was a bigger guy, but you could, he was young. When I was a senior, he was a freshman. Us in Columbia were the two best in the Ivy League. They had an Icelandic player named Ricky Dadison, and him and I had a lot of goals that year. And so, you know, I mean, he was.
Hey, Chuck. If Jesse's got a lot of goals, I don't know how strong your competition is.
There were no chips. There were no chips, but there were goals. Okay. I was a goal scorer, Jimmy. I was a goal scorer.
Okay. Okay, sorry.
And so let's get back to it. you know, and I remembered him, but like not so much, but I do remember him. Okay. So now fast forward, I go to Leipzig as the assistant and I'm learning German. Everything we were doing when I was in Leipzig was everything was in German. So it was good for me. I had to learn German and I was learning. And then maybe our 10th game of the year was at Hoffenheim. And Nagelsmann, if you remember, was going to be going to Leipzig at the end of the season. And Rangnick was taking the one season at Leipzig until Nagelsmann was coming. I go out on the pitch before the match and I'm kind of getting ready for warm up. And someone comes up behind me and goes, "Hey, Jesse, how you doing?" In a perfect American accent. And I was like, I hadn't heard that in a while. And I turn around and it's Pellegrino, Reno, he goes by. And so then we start talking and about our past. And then his younger brother was in the Red Bull Academy when I was at the head coach at New York. And so, you know, we were talking about things. And basically what happened is after university, he went to Germany. He was in the lower leagues as a player. He met a German woman. He got married. He had a German family. And then he got into coaching in the academy. He was at Nuremberg. And he worked his way up the academy at Nuremberg. And people thought very highly of him there. His German is perfect, like immaculate, amazing. And then he was in the Fußballlehre, which is the UEFA Pro license program that they have in Germany. That is probably the most intensive licensing program in the entire world. And it's a year of your life where you either are working in an academy, but you're not a professional coach because you need that. It's Sunday night through Wednesday night every week for the entire year. That's what it takes to get your football license in your UEFA Pro license in Germany. It's the hardest in the world. And they used to have it. They don't anymore, but they used to have it where there's a valedictorian or there's someone who finishes one, two, all the way down. Julian Nagelsmann was in the same course with Reno. And Reno and Julian kind of became friends. Julian became valedictorian of that course. And he was known as a young up and coming in the Hoffenheim Academy coach. And then when Nagelsmann took over as the head coach at Hoffenheim, he needed to balance out his coaching staff. And so then he brought Reno from Nuremberg with him to Hoffenheim. Actually, he may have been 1 year in the academy at Hoffenheim as well. That part I'm not so certain about. Then they became, you know, good friends. They worked together. After that, Julian went to Leipzig. Shortly after that, Reno went to Stuttgart. And, you know, he kind of has similar philosophies to the way Julian thinks. He's got definitely a very similar to Pep in build-up phases and some of the movements and ideas and the possession connections and rotations that he likes to create. He likes to be a good counter-pressing team. His teams are good at pressing, but that's not what he values the most. It's more his positional play that he really values. And then, you know, we played against them. I think my second Bundesliga game with Leipzig was against Stuttgart, and we wound up having a good day at home and we won 4-0. But, you know, so and one of the unique things about the German Bundesliga is the press conference after the match is the two coaches together. Okay. And then you usually let the away coach speak first and then the home coach follows up. And I like that because it kind of keeps you in check in terms of how you choose to discuss the game. You have to show a lot of respect to your opponent and to the coach of the opponent. And when Reno started speaking in German, I was just amazed. And the way that he eloquently described what he was trying to achieve with his team on the day and things he was disappointed with. But I would say that I said to him after the match, I was like, "Listen, your team is really clear. I like your team. And a lot of the things that I know you were trying to achieve, you were very good at on the day, but some of our quality came through in the match. And so he's a guy in all ways, I think, that I've been very impressed with. He's intelligent. He has a clear playing model. He's adapted to life in Germany really well. And I think he has a big future. You know, I like him, I respect him, and I'm always rooting for his team. So it's been really good to see his Hoffenheim team. They had a great start to the season, and then it's been a little bit of a tough stretch for him. And I've been watching all these late matches lately, hoping for him to find a way to get a win, because I want him to stay in his job and continue to keep developing and keep showing people how good he is. So I think this was a big win for them against Werder Bremen this weekend.
Care to follow up on that, Chuck? That was like the best description we could have gotten about Pellegrino Matarazzo.
It's better than an autobiography book.
I was listening to an audio book right now.
Are you kidding me?
Voiced by Jesse Marsh. Well, let's talk, Chuck. Let's talk about one of his players, which is who got named to the 60-man roster. Well, one of the last two names on that list, John Brooks, who... He's got 17 starts so far this season, has been pretty pivotal. Looked like he's playing in the center of a back three at times, and seems to be in pretty decent form. And again, still on that 60-man roster that just got announced. Any comments on either one?
Yeah, well, I think we already know he's 59 or 60 on that list, given that 58 names were alphabetical.
Given how the list was alphabetical and then he was added to the end. Yeah,
I think he's 59. I don't see him coming into to any team with Greg Berhalter as coach. So it's kind of pointless to even talk about because unless he's playing out of his mind and he's the number one rated center back in the Bundesliga and he's been absolutely lighting it up, not getting beat 1v1, you know, all of that taken into account, I just don't see it happening. There's not anything he can do to get into the team.
Okay. All right. You heard it here. It's hard to say otherwise. We're going to take our next break and our last break of Call It What You Want. Sorry, John Brooks. That's the only airtime you're going to get, but plenty for Pellegrino Matarazzo. And I'm kind of curious to see where he goes moving forward. Maybe there's some opportunities over here. We'll have to wait and see. But yes, we're going to get into our last break of Call It What You Want. When we come back, we're going to talk about these leaked U.S. men's national team kits and what's going on with Jesse's voice. Big questions, getting some answers right after this. Welcome back. This is the stretch run of Call It What You Want. I'm Jimmy with Charlie and Jesse. And Jesse, as I teased before the break, it seems like your voice went out last night and had a good time. How are you feeling, buddy?
Yeah, I went to the I'm back here in the States, and I went to the Princeton University versus Cornell basketball game. And I think we've maybe talked about this before, but one of my best friends is Mitch Henderson, the coach of the Princeton team. And this was a big game for them. It was a fantastic game. I mean, it's what's really cool is the Princeton Arena is now selling out the games, and I got to sit courtside, which
whoa easy.
I didn't know that Princeton. I didn't know that Princeton had courtside seats. So that's why I'm mentioning it, because I
sitting with the tiger.
I felt special. I did feel special, and I was screaming, so I lost my voice.
Okay, and who won?
Princeton. Princeton won by two. Really good game. The Cornell coach is a former Princeton player, and he was the assistant for Mitch. His name's Brian Earle, and he's done a really good job with his team. And they have an Ivy League tournament where the top four teams play, and I wouldn't be surprised to see them play again in the final, which I think will be another really, really good high-level Ivy League basketball game.
So. Stay tuned for the Jesse Marsh basketball podcast as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Backdoor cuts.
Princeton going to March Madness? Well, they feeling pretty good about that, or what do they have to do?
Well, it'll come down to whoever wins the tournament that gets the automatic bid.
Got it.
All right. I think Princeton, you know, we went to Sweet 16 last year. We got to be thinking at least Elite Eight this year, I think.
Yeah. I mean, that's the next step.
Are you guys
step.
Accepting that or no? There's no.
I'll accept it. Okay. And also keep it here on Call It What You Want for all of your Princeton basketball updates. All right. Last question of the day. Here it is. Well, it's kind of like, what is your all-time favorite U.S. men's national team jersey? But we're going to show everybody that's watching this some leaked kits that came out. And I kind of want to get your thoughts. For those that can't see it, there's the white one, and it has some trim on the sleeves that are the red and white stripes. And then on the collar, it's like a mix of the flag. It starts with the blue with the stars and then the red and white goes around it, and everything else pretty straight. And then the other one is kind of like the bomb pop of the blue, white, and red, but now it looks more blue and then a little bit of white, and it's adding some like 1990s, I don't know, you guys can help me here, kind of flair to it at the bottom.
Well, but I'm seeing a lot of Ed Hockley, the NFL referee, where he had his, it was all jacked and he would have his.
Yeah, that's true. The mannequins referee used here are yeah, completely jacked. Yeah. Yeah, I guess it's kind of like the bomb pop jersey melting is what
Mr. Brad had to exactly
say. That's a good way to say it. How are we feeling about these right off the top? What's your initial reaction, Chuck?
My initial reaction is it could be better. It could be better. You know,
I don't mind the white ones. I'd like to see the short and sock combo. Honestly, when you see all of it together, sometimes it changes my mind. I'll say that.
I think they look cool, man. I think, you know, listen, I'm an old man, but I think that, I don't, you know, I don't know what the kids are wearing these days, but they look good, man. I think they look good.
I mean, for a plain white kit, it's kind of cool. I like the American flag, at least a hint of that on the arms and the neck. And then the melted bomb pop, it's kind of like a, I don't know, graffiti bomb pop. I don't know. Either way, I would have liked maybe some stars in there. Maybe some sort of star in the middle or along the bottom.
Denim,
of the
like 94. Are you thinking denim?
Hey, if they have to do that for the
Chuck
World Cup,
like Captain America.
Do you have a favorite U.S. men's national team jersey of all time? Do you have like a top two in your mind?
Yes, I do, because it's the one I came into the national team with. It's the Nike 91 where they have the circle in the middle and your number was in the middle of that one.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. I love that one, but it meant something to me.
That was kind of a silhouette that everyone had that, you know what I mean?
That's true. Yeah, the Dutch had it, Mexico had it. But Brazil. Yeah, it has I don't know. So it's hard to kind of extract.
For me it's similar. Mine wasn't like when I first was on the youth national team. I don't know if you remember, mm-hmm, then I'm dating myself. But there was the Adidas old school.
Oh, like the three stripes over the shoulder?
No, they had the octagon shadow kind of like on the – see, this is why both of you are like, what are you talking about?
That's what I say. That's a no for me, dog. That's a no for me.
They were – I remember I was like 16 and I put it on and I felt like – you know,
yeah, right.
I felt like this – I've superhuman. Just achieved my dream.
Yeah, exactly right. That's how I feel putting that total 90 jersey on as well. Chuck, what's your favorite of all time then?
You know, I do love the 2010 World Cup kits that I did not get to rock. But I think that with the sash over it, there's another one that has like the old school U.S. soccer logo on it. I remember it was like a red with a white sash. I think I remember. And then just I think because the U.S. did so well, those 02 World Cup jerseys. I know that was also, you know, a silhouette that a lot of other teams had, but those kits are kind of iconic in my mind. Now, the 94 kit, just because it's the denim kit, I need to see something like that in the World Cup coming up in 26. There's got to be something signature.
Kind of a nod to 94, right?
You got
to
have denim on denim.
That
no
we
one
need
else
as many
has.
Jorts out there.
Jean
jorts.
Jacket warm up.
Jean jacket with jorts. That's all we need.
Jean jacket warm up. Oh, count me in.
All right, everybody. That is it. We're calling it a show. Thank you for your support and love. As always, on behalf of me and Chuck and Jesse, we want to say thank you to everybody that listens and watches. And of course, all the wonderful people behind the scenes that make us look better than we deserve to be. Make sure you continue to hit like and subscribe to anything that you get from this show or anytime or any place that you consume it. And we will see you next time. Later.
Jeremy Renner returns to Paramount Plus for a brand new season of the original hit series, Mayor of Kingstown.
My job is to create a balance, avoid a war.
From executive producer Taylor Sheridan, co-creator of Yellowstone.
There's some new players in town, and they brought the flag.
And Antoine Fuqua, director of Training Day.
I know it's always been a war zone, Mike, but this is next level.
The mayor is back in business.
Are you warning me?
You're going to find out.
Mayor of Kingstown, new season streaming June 2nd, exclusively on Paramount Plus.